You are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN.com, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to SQPN.com and click on the Bluehost banner for more information. And by the Amazon Store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at SQPN.com, and your purchase will help support our show. Welcome back to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, the podcast series that is entirely dedicated to this new TV show that we love, absolutely love, Once Upon a Time on ABC. And I'm pretty sure that seeing the success of this TV series, it will soon be syndicated in many other countries in the world. And it's been a success right from the get-go. And so we love talking about the series. We love analyzing it. This show is called The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. So hopefully we'll be able to show you all the details that you might have missed, explain a little bit of the backstory and the inspiration for all these fairy tales, and also for certain of the themes that we see in this TV series. And hopefully that will make us enjoy the TV series even more. Joining me, just like last week, is, last time that we did a podcast, because actually we're recording this, this is a secret, we're recording this one after another because we were a little bit late to the party with this podcast. But anyway, just like last time, I welcome Lisa Jones back to our podcast. Hey, Lisa.
How are you?
How's life in Texas?
It is good. It's hot.
It's always hot in Texas. And if it's cold, the food is hot.
So, that's right.
It's a good place to be. And also joining us today again is David Handless, my co-host from The Secrets of Tintin. Hey, David.
Hey, Father.
Where are you calling in from? Which part of the United States?
Omaha, Nebraska. Same time zone as Texas, but a lot colder.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I am in a totally different time zone. I am in a tiny little country in Europe. It's one of those fairy tale countries, actually. Although the countries north of me have many more fairy tales, and also east of me. I'm in the Netherlands, and so that's the neighboring country of Germany, where a lot of the fairy tales come from. And we've got Denmark and Norway and all those countries too. They have fantastic myths. We have cows and tulips, though, and great cheese, which they don't have. Well, they have them too, but we have better cheese. Just saying. So, but no, I love all our German listeners as well. It's time to talk about the second episode of Once Upon a Time. The pilot was really, last time when we finished recording, we were like, how long was this pilot episode? And it was just a regular episode, but there were just so many themes and so many storylines in there. This second episode is a little bit more simpler. But for a pilot, my goodness, there was just, we didn't even manage to finish our show notes. And we had a podcast of 1 hour. So anyway, the second episode is called The Thing You Love Most, which is a beautiful title. But it is actually referring to a very dramatic scene in the middle of the episode. What is that thing that you love the most, and who is you in there, and yeah, what's going to happen to that thing? Here is the sound of the sneak peek that was posted on the internet. Actually, I had two things lined up, but so for the series, they've been posting a lot of pretty long scenes from the actual TV show, upcoming TV show on YouTube. So you can just look for Once Upon a Time in YouTube, and you will find lots and lots of great clips from the series. And I want to play this one.
What must I do to enact this curse?
You need to sacrifice a heart.
I sacrifice my prized steed.
A horse? This is the curse to end all curses. You think a horse is gonna do?
Great power requires great sacrifice.
The heart you need
must come from something far more precious.
Wait.
Did he just say precious?
Yeah, he pulled a Gollum right there.
I was like, precious?
I think they did that on purpose.
I think so too. It was very cool.
The heart of the thing you love most.
What I love most died because of Snow White.
Oh, is there no one else you totally love? This curse isn't gonna be easy. Vengeance never is, dearie. You have to ask yourself a simple question. How far are you willing to go?
As far as it takes.
Then please stop wasting everyone's time and just do it. You know what you love. Now go kill it.
Once upon a time. The music in the background, it's very Lost-like. Lost would have these previews as well with almost the same kind of, you hear the orchestra, like, and then you're like, what's going to happen? So this episode is all about telling us the backstory of how this curse came about in fairy tale land. At first, I was a little bit disoriented. I was like, what are we actually looking at? Because we see the evil queen. She's talking to her magic mirror, and she wants to cast the dark curse. So I was like, okay, so this is before what we saw in the last episode. It's kind of going in all sorts of, you know, it goes to different times in the history of fairy tale land. But I was very excited to see the magic mirror for the first time. We've seen a mirror in her real life apartment, but we hadn't seen the magic mirror yet. And visually, it is very much like what we saw in the Disney movies, right? With the face lit from the bottom, from the chin, you know, and then, although this magic mirror is a little bit more opinionated, and he's like, well, you know, do you really want to do this? Go see Maleficent. Is that how you
pronounce it?
Maleficent. Maleficent. Which is another evil witch. And apparently they've been in contact before because there was a trade. And the curse that the evil queen put on Snow White, trying to kill her with the poisoned apple, was actually given to her by Maleficent in exchange for the dark curse that she now needs to basically take vengeance again on Snow White. And there is apparently a black market for curses, for evil curses, literally black, because the two ladies are pretty black. It's interesting to see both the evil queen and another witch. And I don't know, is Maleficent, is that from a fairy tale, or is it just a generic evil witch?
Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, Sleeping Beauty.
There we go. Yeah. There, I need to brush up on my Disney movies. Really,
it helps having little kids and having, you know, watched all these on Disney recently.
That's okay. Kind of the bonus of, I guess, since ABC is producing this show, they don't have to worry about rights or licensing for all these, you know, hundreds of Disney characters. They can just use all of them.
They're owned by Disney.
Yeah.
Oh, that explains a lot. Excellent. Excellent.
They can use any fairy tale that they've got. They can use in this show.
Fantastic! I love the name, by the way, Maleficent, which is, I think, her original name in the fairy tale as well, right?
Yeah.
It's again from Latin, as many of these fairy tale names, and it's from male facere, which means to do evil. So, and that's her job. She just does evil, and she looks pretty evil. And so, of course, she doesn't want to give that curse or she wants something in return, but the evil queen doesn't want to give her anything. And so there's this fight, very reminiscent, I thought, of the big fight between Gandalf and what's his name from The Lord of the Rings? Saruman. You know, you've got that big fight in the Tower of Saruman, and they're being very evil. And in this scene, the Maleficent, or actually the evil queen, does very much the same stuff to Maleficent as we've seen Saruman do to Gandalf in that tower. I don't know if that was on purpose or if that's just, again, part of the generic toolkit of evil wizards and witches. It's just what they do. So, Mike Kuipers has a great... Mike is in the chat room. We have a live chat room and a live video stream while we're recording this. And so he has these quirky ideas. I should introduce myself as being from Netherland. Sorry, I was distracted. Back to the story. Maleficent tries to defend herself. And then the evil queen threatens to kill her pet, which happens to be a black unicorn. Now, the unicorn is a very important animal. Of course, we know the unicorn from many fairy tales. Also made an appearance in the first book of Harry Potter, if you read that. It's the unicorn that gets killed by Voldemort, and he's drinking the blood from the unicorn to stay alive. In this case, it's a black unicorn. Now, the unicorn... just give you a little bit of background to that creature. It's a creature that you find in a lot of myths, but in the Middle Ages it was used among other stories, but it was also used as a symbol of Christ, of Jesus Christ. The idea being that, you know, this animal looks like a horse, but there is something special to it. He's not just a horse. He also has this unicorn, which makes him unique. And so that is kind of a symbol for Jesus Christ, who looks like a human being, who is born as a human, but there is much more to him. He's just not just a regular guy. He actually is also the Son of God. And the whole story of the blood of the unicorn being sacred and giving eternal life is a symbol for the belief that when Christ dies on the cross, you know, there's this soldier and pierces his heart, and then blood and water streams out, and that is seen as kind of a symbol of the life that Christ gives to the world, and it's a symbol in Catholic theology also of the sacrament of the Eucharist and of the consecrated wine, which is the blood of Christ, which is life-giving blood, literally. So all that you know, background is part of the whole mythology of the character of a unicorn, but in this case, it's kind of a twisted version of that symbol, because in this case it's a black unicorn, and it's not a, you know, magnificent big horse. It's basically a pony version of the unicorn. So it's almost as if it's a mockery of the original animal, which is supposed to be a very, you know, a sacred animal, and definitely an animal. It's a white horse on the light side of the force, as they would say in Star Wars land. In this case, it's just a puny little black unicorn, all ugly, but still loved very dearly by Maleficent. And so she tries to protect it, but the evil queen runs off with that curse. What happened in the real world? I'm kind of fuzzy on this episode. Emma is still in Storybrooke, I suppose.
Doesn't she go to the, I forget his name, Jiminy Cricket, Archie. Is that his name, yeah. Archie?
Oh, yes.
And she goes to him, and I guess they kind of set her up to go there and read the files, and then she's set up to say that she stole them.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, she's basically arrested again by the sheriff for having that thing in possession. And there's this conversation also with Jiminy Cricket. Again, about this whole fantasy of fairy tales and what to think of that. And you really see that none of the characters in Storybrooke have any clue what's really going on and who they really are.
And the only thing they all have in common is they're afraid of the mayor.
Absolutely. The evil queen is very, very evil in real life, too. She's very threatening. And what I love to see is how Emma stands up to her. You know, Emma is clearly not afraid at all. She doesn't let herself be intimidated. She's very firm. And there is this scene later on, because at first, of course, Regina tries to poison Emma. We don't know for sure, but she brings her a basket of apples from a tree in her backyard that she had since she was a little girl. Now, we all know that red apples, that's a big sign of trouble, and you should certainly not eat the apple.
I think that was one of my favorite scenes, where she's about to bite into an apple, and Henry says, you know, where did you get the apple? And she says something like, from your mother. And he's like, are you kidding?
You should know better.
Right.
So he saves her there. And later on, Emma goes to the queen's backyard with a chainsaw and starts destroying that tree. I thought it was hilarious. Oh, man, it's just this.
I love the way she didn't back down. You know, the mayor, you know, keeps threatening her with these kind of idle threats. I guess she's just so used to everyone in the town doing whatever she wants.
Yes.
And I love the way Emma just, no.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care what you want. Exactly. Now, of course, she's a bounty hunter, so she's a tough lady. Yeah. She's not quickly intimidated. We've seen that. And I love that. She's a very strong mom. It's interesting to see her relationship with Henry, who is such a kind of a dreamy boy and totally different from her in terms of character. But the thing is, you would think that they would write the role for Henry, that he would totally, you know, rely upon Emma, as she's the fixer, the strong character. But actually, Henry's pretty strong himself as well. He's very opinionated, and he, too, is not at all intimidated by the evil queen. He just basically is like, yeah, whatever, Mom. Or doesn't even call her Mom, but she totally ignores her.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic between Henry and his mother. And, it's been really interesting to watch that, to see how he relates or doesn't relate to her. And kind of just blows her off, whatever she wants him to do.
I think he knows that ultimately she doesn't really have power in this world. That's something I wondered. Did Regina give up her powers when she transferred over to our world? Because it looks like she did. So her power now is intrigue, and she can influence people, but she has no magical powers or anything.
Don't you wonder how much she knows? It keeps coming back to me that she, something's up. She knows something, but how much and what?
True. I think that she is just evil out of habit, because it's just part of her genetic makeup to be evil. But she doesn't she's not aware of that, where that evil comes from. It's a very intuitive thing. And we know from the conversation that she has with, that I just played there with Rumpeldumple Skinuldable, whatever his name is, that, you know, she will forget everything once she acts out this evil curse, this dark curse. And that is why she easily promises him to, you know, to make what he, because he is going to be transferred to the real world as well. But he bargains and gets her to promise that he will be very rich in the real world or in the new world, and that she will basically do anything he says when he says please, right? And so, but he also tells her that once the curse is in effect, she will remember nothing, and that's why she'll also, I won't remember what I promised you, so I don't care, just go ahead. And so, but I love that. That little detail there that, you must do whatever I request as long as I say please. Because isn't this thing in education when you were raising kids? It's like you forgot to say the magic word.
Yes.
Isn't it? The magic word is please. How fitting.
I didn't even catch that,
how
yes.
Fitting in this story that the word please becomes a magic word, a true magic word, because she actually obeys him when he says please. Now, and we don't know if Rumpelstiltskin in the real world knows who he is. But he's definitely an evil guy. I mean, he's called Mr. Gold. Again, referring, of course, to the gold in that story that we recounted last time in our podcast. And he's clearly very rich and very powerful because he owns the town. But it's kind of fuzzy what his deal is. He has this conversation with the evil queen in the garden, where she's trying to heal her apple tree, and I think he's giving her hints. I think he knows, but she doesn't really know. And so he explains that, you know, I got you this child. I got you Henry. I procured Henry for you. And Regina is like, well, but what's going on here? And you wanted Emma to come to Storybrooke. So she starts to figure it out. She's like, well, there's a master plan. And this is not a coincidence that Emma is here. He might be the one who actually organized all this. And we know from the backstory of Rumpelstiltskin that he wants to get a hold of Emma. He knows her name and he wants power over her. And in the original fairy tale, he actually claims the child, in this case, Emma. And so there is some ominous premonition of well, what he might do to Emma, or how he can thwart her vocation or her mission to save the world. So, but Gold doesn't want any more questions and says the magic word, and then Regina shuts up and obeys him. Meanwhile, in the magic world, in the fairy tale world, we finally see the story of this dark curse. So after she procured it, or stole it, actually, from the other witch, I forgot what her name was, something with evil in the name.
Maleficent.
She gathers somewhere on the outskirts of Magic Land with a couple of very evil looking people. They're all very ugly. And it's almost, in a way, endearing to see how they react to her. Because they all look up to the evil queen and they are afraid of her. But at the same time, it's like, oh, so are you going to make us happy? And because in this world, we can never be happy. And it's kind of tragic, because as long as the good guys are part of the fairy tale logic, then yes, the evil people can never win. They will always lose. So their life is always a disaster. It always ends in their defeat. How frustrating must that be? So I was just surprised by the way they told this. It's like, oh, those poor evil dudes, they never win. You can understand.
We're not bad. We're just written that way.
Yeah. It's almost as if it's their fate to be evil, but you know, they never get a break. They never have their life is so dark. You almost feel sorry for them. Anyway, it's their motivation to collaborate with the evil queen to change this and to be transferred to this other world where there will be no more happy endings, and where the good people, the Prince Charming and Snow White, they will no longer always win. It's more kind of open. At least that's what it seems. However, in order to bring about that evil curse and that change, sacrifice is needed. Again, I think a very fundamental theme in fairy tales and in myths and even in biblical stories. Like, change always requires sacrifice. Before Moses can bring his people to the promised land, they have to go on a journey of 40 years through the desert. Huge sacrifices, huge dangers. It's not like God just flips a switch and then boom, they're in the promised land. They got to do something themselves. They need to undertake the journey and sacrifice part of themselves in order to get there and to make it happen. And I think in a way that's true in every situation. You know, in a relationship, if you want to make your relationship work, if you want to have a good family and raise your kids, I mean, that requires lots of sacrifices. Of course, I'm totally not knowing what I talk about as a celibatory priest. But Lisa, help me out here. I mean, family life requires sacrifices, doesn't it?
It most surely does.
What's your most recent sacrifice that you...
well, well, my middle son has been home with pneumonia for the last week. So aww. I would say that, you know, taking care of him, you know, giving up, I guess, everything I had to do and needed to do this week to be home and be with him and the good and the bad of that together. So there's yeah. always a sacrifice and nothing ever quite goes as planned.
Wouldn't you wish?
But he is on the way to feeling better.
That is good. That's good. There's some mama magic in there that that heals it. But you know, sacrifice. It's part of almost every story. It's also, you know, a lot of these stories have this a similar structure where you have a hero and the hero undertakes a journey, and then in order to go to the next stage of the story, there is a sacrifice. You know, whether it is a literal sacrifice by giving up. I mean, in Star Wars, forgive me for bringing up Star Wars again, but it's very clear. You've got, you know, Luke Skywalker discovers that Darth Vader is, let's say, part of the family. He sacrifices his hand, or his hand is cut off. And that is at the end of the story. But it's also the beginning of almost a transformation in himself. And the next time we see him, he has a new hand. And he's a Jedi, so the sacrifice precedes the transformation. Again, bringing looking at biblical stories in the New Testament, the fundamental story there is, of course, the sacrifice of Christ on the cross. He's killed, but it is not just literally a dead end. It's not the end. It's the beginning of the rest of the future. And literally, it's the beginning of, it's kind of opening up eternal life in the Christian theology. So there too, the sacrifice is not the end, it's the beginning of something. And here too, it's always the sacrifice, and at least as far as I've seen in the episode so far, sacrifice is a changer. It's an ingredient for change. Now, the sacrifice that they have to bring is not very big. They have to basically hand in some hair. The darkest souls have to give away a little bit of their hair. I thought it was very interesting. I expected at least, you know, just give me a limb or an ear or a nose or a foot, but it's just a bit of hair. And she is so evil that she, even though that should be a very simple sacrifice, she is conjuring up all these, like trees and whatever it is, like the whole forest menaces to attack them, but they just gladly give away a little bit of their hair. Now that too, speaking of the backstory of or the symbols that we see there, giving away part of your hair is there's more to that. It's not just by coincidence that this is part of the sacrifice that they have to bring, because hair is always seen, at least in mythology, also in biblical stories, as a symbol of strength and of life. There's one particular story that many of our listeners might be familiar with. It's the story of Samson. Or is it Samsung or Samson? It's not the brand of the televisions, but the other guy, Samson. And so, or is it Simpson? Help me out. You guys are English. Simpson and Delilah.
Delilah.
Samson.
Samson.
Samson. Samson. Right. Delilah,
that's Samson. The dude with the hair.
Right.
So he is this giant. He's extremely strong. He's kind of like a Old Testament version of the Hulk, but with more hair and not green. But as long as he has his, you know, beautiful dark hair, he is super strong. And then at one point in the story, the bad guys figure that out, and his hair is cut off, and he loses all his strength. I always loved that story. It was part of the children's Bible that I had as a child. And so, it's kind of an obvious symbol. Like hair is a sign of strength and of youth. The older you get, and if you're a man, the more hair you will lose. I mean, I witnessed it every day in a mirror. Like, there is less and less hair, and I'm getting older and older. Lisa, of course, is exempt of that. She probably you have beautiful hair, right? You've got this. You're
yes,
surrounded by
this
symbol of life and strength. But so that's kind of where this comes from. In fairy tales, they took that story of Samson and retold it. And you've got. Gosh, there's this other very famous story just recently turned into a great animated movie by Disney of Rapunzel. Or you know that movie in the United States as Tangled.
Tangled.
So it's this fairy tale, very famous fairy tale of this girl that has this wonderful golden hair. Which, doesn't that hair also have like superpowers or something? There's something to that hair, but I don't remember what it was.
It can heal someone or keep them young.
There you go. So again, hair as a symbol literally of life and youth. And so and that I think is ultimately going back to that biblical story of Samson. Just look it up on Wikipedia and read the whole thing for yourself. And so here too, they have to give a little bit of their hair, which is actually sacrificing a bit of their life, and that makes the change. That is the ingredient, at least part of the ingredients, that the evil queen needs. But there is more. There is more that she needs to sacrifice. She needs to sacrifice, according to I always have to take a glance at my notes here. Rumpelstiltskin. Rumpelstiltskin has told her that she has to sacrifice that which she loves most, the thing that she loves most. And so she sacrifices her childhood steed, her horse. And it fails. It doesn't work. And then she gets back to the prison and is like, yeah, what, a horse? That's not enough. And then we get to a pretty dramatic scene where she speaks with a guy in her quarters, which I thought was her servant. But she calls him Daddy. So is that her real dad, or is it like someone that she projects?
I think it actually is her father.
It's her father.
That was the impression I got, was that it was her father.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, and she kills her father, and she rips out his heart, and she does it barehanded, which was also kind of scary. They didn't show it, but wow. I was like, good grief. She is willing to sacrifice her father in order to basically destroy the happiness of the people around her. And in go ahead.
So that was an interesting scene, because you almost for a moment saw her struggle with it. Almost.
Very briefly.
You know, as he pleaded with her, you know, not to do it. And it's like she almost paused and then no.
Her anger must be so deeply rooted. I mean, what brings a girl to do that? To kill her father? What's going on? What is her problem? We know from the conversation in the prison that Snow White has destroyed something that she loved most. And we don't know what that is. But apparently it's traumatic enough to make her kill her father. I've been listening to a lot of commentary on the Lost series by the writers, and we know that some of the Lost writers are also writing for this series. And one of the themes that kept coming back in Lost, and which they openly admitted was part of their storytelling technique, were daddy issues. They said every interesting character has daddy issues. It's part of like what everybody has. I guess every one of us has daddy issues in some form or another. And so they love to play on that. Well, I think this is kind of the epitome of daddy issues. She just killed her father. And he seems to be a nice guy.
Right.
Wow. She's just creating a daddy issue there, right there. And then she goes and brings a flower to the grave of her father. And we see that the father is called Henry. So that's
right,
where she...
That was a nice twist.
Oh, it's like, this is gruesome. So the boy is called after the father that she murdered.
Right.
But you would assume she doesn't know in this reality that she murdered him?
I don't think
something
so.
Something subliminal, I don't know, that she turns around and names the son the same thing as her father.
But there is something very scary in this episode. Because remember, at the end, Emma speaks to Regina and asks her on the spot, do you love Henry? And then she is like, yeah, I love him very much. And well, with this in your mind that she killed her father, who was called Henry, that almost seems like it's some evil prophecy.
Yeah.
If she loves the boy in the same way she loved her father, that's not looking good for Henry.
Well, it kind of goes back to from the second episode. It kind of ties back to the first, where the first witch, Maleficent.
Mm-hmm.
Mentioned that, you know, if you enact this curse, it will create a hole that you can't fill.
So she's
killed her father. Now she's trying to fill it with this boy.
Indeed. And it doesn't work because she is not able to love anymore. It's almost as if she gave that away. She's unable to love. And with disastrous consequences, because it means that she will keep on trying to fill that gap with destruction and evil. And it will never satisfy her. So what she says in the first episode, I will continue to destroy your happiness for as long as I live. Even if it's the last thing I do, that might actually be true. That might be her fate. There's nothing that can save her anymore because she gave up what was the most important to her, what she loved most. So and basically she sacrificed, now that I think of it, she sacrificed the heart of her father.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. I'm thinking of something else. Of deeper symbol here, or deeper meaning to this. She sacrifices the heart of her father, the symbol of her, of his love for her, his life-giving love, because she's born out of love. You know, it's a child, at least that's what we hope, is born out of the love of parents. She destroys the symbol of that love. She rejects that love or just burns it. And it's no longer in her life. That too, I think, if you look at the Christian view or the Christian belief, that is a very fundamental theme in Christianity. That it starts with Adam and Eve, a story that we talked about before, with them rejecting the love of their father, God, their father. And how do they do that? By eating from that tree. And later on in the ways that we depicted that story, that tree became an apple tree. So that's where the apples come from in our fairy tales. It's referring to that, you know, what people thought it was an apple. But if you look at the Bible story, there's no mention of an apple. It's just what they painted in the Middle Ages. And so the apple became kind of this cursed fruit. If you eat from it, you lose life, you lose your future. They rejected the love of their father, Adam and Eve, and then later on, the entire history is constantly filled with people that reenact that in a certain way and also refuse God's love. And God keeps trying to, again, heal things, mend the heart, fill that gap that between man and God, and ultimately, the only way to bridge that gap is by a sacrifice. And that's where Jesus comes in. So I'm curious to see if we'll see more of this in the storyline of Once Upon a Time. I will not be surprised if that happens. If there's going to be some kind of sacrifice, although I'm not sure if the queen can be redeemed, if there's going to be redemption. I don't know. I don't know how many seasons they plan for this series. So we'll probably not see it at the end of this season, because you cannot get rid of the bad people because there will be no story, right? Anyway, we'll see. So where was I? I think we've kind of covered the most elements of the story. Is there anything else that you remember that we need to talk about? I love to see the real world version of the mirror, by the way. Who is this journalist who runs the Weekly Mirror?
They used him as the reporter.
Totally brilliant. Totally brilliant. The missing pages, of course. Henry has torn out the last pages of the story and burnt them in the fire so that his mom doesn't know how the story will end. And basically by that, opening up the story, it's no longer set in stone what will happen. The future will depend on the choices that the characters will make. I like this series. Let's take a short break here. This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by our good friends at Bluehost. Bluehost is a great hosting company. If you want to set up your blog, if you are a fan of Once Upon a Time and you want to set up your own fan blog, then of course there are free services. But that always kind of looks a bit unprofessional. You have your domain name is like onceuponatimefan.blogspot.com/folder/whatever.html. Bluehost has, I think, a great deal. They offer unlimited storage space and unlimited traffic. So even if your blog gets really popular, you won't pay more because it's like a fixed fee. And for $6.95 per month, they will also give you a free .com domain name. So you can have a real professional looking, you know, domain and website. And they have a thing that I really love, and that is like a one-click installation of WordPress. WordPress is kind of the leading platform for blogging. And normally it's kind of a pain to install it. You need to open an FTP connection and everything. Well, Bluehost makes that really simple. It's just a button you click, and 2 minutes later, you have your own professional-looking blog. So we recommend Bluehost. If you go to our website at sqpn.com or on the subsite for this website, for this podcast, which I still have to set up, but if you go to sqpn.com, there's a Bluehost banner, and you can click on it to sign up for an account or find more information. And again, for $6.95 per month, that's an expensive cup of coffee. But you could have your own, you know, really popular blog instead. I think it's an amazing deal. And so we're glad that they sponsor this episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time. All right. Well, let's wrap things up with perhaps our thoughts about the story so far. Lisa, who's your favorite character so far?
Gosh, that's a hard question. I really like Emma, but I think that Mary Margaret, Snow White, you know, going mm-hmm. both, I think that watching her in real life, that even though she's unhappy, she still has all of this optimism and kind of bright and shiny to her that you can see the fairy tale character in her still. You know, she hasn't let it, it hasn't diminished her spark. And I really like that because she seems to see the hope and wants to believe in all of this. And so I like her.
All right. And what about you, David? Who's your favorite character so far?
Well, my favorite one actually, well, it's not really one of the Disney characters. My favorite still is Henry because he knows, let's say, he knows something, or at least he believes something, and he doesn't care what anyone else thinks. He just goes for it.
I like that too. I'm torn. I really like Mary Margaret because of her hope and that certain freshness to her character. She is definitely in the real world the most fairy tale like character of the whole bunch, and she has great lines in the series, and always kind of this very very inspiring character, I think. But I have to say, I really like the Evil Queen. I think that it's an amazing Evil Queen, and there is, she has this look in her eyes where it's like, yeah, that is so awesome. The actress does a tremendous job. I think for playing both the Evil Queen in the fairy tale, the actress is called Lana Perilla. I didn't know her. She's from a Puerto Rican and Italian background, so that's a definite pro. She's been in 24, I see, on IMDb. But I think she's just a very, very cool evil queen. I like Jennifer Morrison as well. So Emma's character, because she has humor, but she's also very matter-of-fact, you know, like go-get-em type of girl. And she, actually, that actress has been, and I was like, the moment I saw her in the series, I was like, I know her. Where have I seen her before? And it triggered this kind of science fiction antenna with me. It's like, it's got to be science fiction. And I looked it up. I was like, she's been in House, MD. Like, that's not it. I don't know her from House MD because I've not watched that entire series. And then it hit me. She was Kirk's mom in the new Star Trek movie.
Oh, right, she right. was, yep. wasn't
that's,
she?
That's her. And so
I'd forgotten.
That makes her actually instantly my favorite character. Because, you know, there's nothing that can top that. She is Kirk.
So that means Captain Kirk is Snow White's grandson.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes. Now, where does Spock feature in all of this? I don't think they have the rights to that franchise. So I don't think that we'll see any of that. But,
my brain just got twisted there for a second.
It's terrible what these podcasts do with us. Hey, I want to end the show with a few little trivia and notes that I found about the two episodes that we've watched so far. In the first episode, there is an in-joke, like a hidden joke. When we see Henry's email inbox, you know, he's kind of a tech-heavy, so he's this computer. And Emma is tracing his computer, right? So she's going through his inbox to figure out where he went. There is one of the emails is from Damon, which is actually a reference to Damon Lindelof, who is one of the writers and who was one of the major writers for Lost. So that's kind of funny. There was something else. Oh, about the names. There was a great little article that I found about the names. Let me see if I can find that. Of course, now I can't find it. It was basically explaining how the names for the fairy tale characters in the real world were all a play on their fairy tale names. And I can't believe I cannot find that anymore. Here's another bit of trivia. The Regina, when she offers the red apples to Emma, she says that these apples are honey crisps. But according to the apple experts, the shape of the apples actually make that they are red delicious. They're called mm-hmm. red delicious. I don't know. That might be just a mistake in the research for the show. Where was that part? I love that part about the names, but I cannot find it anymore. So we've got the recap here, trivia, reviews, overview. I lost it. But we can perhaps figure it out by ourselves. Let's go through the names there. So Mary Margaret Blanchard. Is Snow White in real life? Well, Blanchard is actually French, and Blanche-Neige is the French equivalent of Snow White.
Blanche is white, so.
So, yeah.
So Blanchard.
Blanchard, Snow White, makes sense. Someone else fortunately found the link to the names here, the names of the series. Thank you, Inge. Blanchard, name reflecting the purity of the princess she once was. Mary, of course, has biblical connotations, the mother of Christ. And she, her character is kind of saint-like in a way, very, you know, pure in her hope for the future. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget that Snow White is the mother of Emma, and Emma is this child of the prophecy, the one who is going to save the world. So actually, Mary, very appropriate name for the mother of the person who's going to save the world. Margaret, second name, means pearl. And Blanchard means white. So both the pearl and the color white, of course, are symbols of purity. The evil queen in Storybrooke is called Regina Mills. So, of course, Regina in Latin means queen. Rumpelstiltskin is now Mr. Gold. Of course, that the refers to the original fairy tale with the straw that is spun into gold. Let's see, who else have we got? Jiminy Cricket. This is funny. Is the resident psychiatrist Archie, and what is his family name? Hopper.
Hopper.
Cricket Hopper. Love it. And then Red Riding Hood is the one that I didn't spot, of course, in the first episode. Her name in Storybrooke is Ruby. And Ruby, of course, mm-hmm. refers to the color of Red Riding Hood's cape. And, oh, wow, this one is awesome, too. Cinderella apparently is called Ashley in the real world. Cinderella's evil stepmother made Cinderella sleep by the cinders and the ashes. And her nickname was Ashenputtelchen, or Ashy Slut in English. So the Assenpuster in Dutch. So Ashley for Cinderella. That is funny.
That's, you can tell they had a lot of fun with this.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. And, oh, there's another name that I was wondering about Bella's, or Ella's, what, Emma's, sorry, Emma Swan. Why is she called Swan? What's the deal with that?
If you noticed Snow White, when everything they had in the castle had swans on it, and I don't know why, but...
Oh, wait a minute. I missed that.
But I don't
know
if it was like the family crest or something for Prince Charming, but the swan was used in a lot of decor.
Yes. I remember the little glass or crystal figurines mm-hmm. above the cradle. Those were all swans. Well, the swan, of course, is a symbol of royalty. It is... also a bird that starts really ugly. We've got the ugly duckling story.
It
turns into a swan. So that could be a symbol for her own transformation from this kind of lonely, not really ugly, but she's definitely kind of out of place in the real world. But her future might actually be to become a swan, to become someone really powerful, beautiful, etc. And then Prince Charming is just called John Doe. John Doe. I love that. And we never hear his name. So it's. I think his isn't his true name like. He says it at one point. Is it James?
It's James. Yeah.
James. Okay.
But of course, no one ever calls him that.
They say in the original fairy tales, he's not. He doesn't have a name. But that was something that was created just for the show.
Okay.
I read that in an article the other day.
Interesting. And then the other character, the only character that remains a little bit enigmatic is Sheriff Graham. I don't know mm-hmm. what his fairy tale counterpart is. I don't know exactly why he's a sheriff or why he's called Graham. Oh, and then, of course, you've got the minor characters. You see, do you remember the big guy with the beard who was also in prison at one point?
Grumpy, I think he's.
Yeah.
Yep.
He is actually the dwarf Grumpy. And I don't know what his real world name is. I forgot to look that up. But let's see. I can find that probably on IMDb here in the cast list. Now, do we see Grumpy, the dwarf Grumpy?
We do, but not until episode 3.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, he's just Grumpy.
I mean, we see him in the real world in episode 3.
Right.
I think
right,
we saw him at the glass casket in the first episode just for like a half a second.
Oh, right.
Interesting.
That's about it.
Yeah, a lot of the other minor characters don't have like two names. They just have one, either in the fairy tale world or in the real world. So, I love that kind of detail in the series. It makes me want to go back and rewatch the pilot and see what I missed. And especially now that we have a little bit more backstory, you start to, you know, figure things out. And again, I'm like, every time we see something that we don't understand, there's probably a reason for it. And either it's something that we can figure out for ourselves, or it's something that's going to be revealed later on. But it's what makes me come back to this series over and over again. Right, that wraps up this second episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Thank you for listening. And Lisa, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I blog with my sister over at soundmindandspirit.com.
Soundmindandspirit.com. That's a great domain name, by the way.
Thank you.
Something to aspire to. And David, where can people find you on the web?
Right now, they can find me just on David Handlos on Twitter. I'll still working on a blog. It just exists on my laptop. Sometime it'll come out in the next couple months.
Once upon a time, there will be a blog. Someday.
There you go.
And, of course, David is my co-host for The Secrets of Tintin that you can find at tintin.sqpn.com. Go to sqpn.com, the website of the StarQuest Production Network, for more shows like this one. And I have a weekly show called The Break, which you might want to check out. It's an hour-long kind of morning show type of program, and I talk about movies, about video games, about technology. I answer questions that people have about those peculiar Catholics and why they do the things they do, and so I answer questions there. But it's overall just a show about things that I'm passionate about, and since I'm a Catholic priest in the Netherlands, faith is part of my passions, but it's not the only passion in my life. So go check that out also on sqpn.com. Follow us on Twitter if you want to keep up to date on our podcasts and more Once Upon a Time related news. Our Twitter address is Once Upon a Time PC. So Once Upon a Time and then the letters PC, which stand for podcast. So Once Upon a Time PC. We hope to see you on Twitter. That's also the place where you can leave your comments. If you have some time, go over to iTunes, leave us a review or a rating, preferably 5 stars. And that's how other people can find our show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon somewhere in fairy tale land.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.